Sex City is a show that discusses sex and sexuality. Some words and phrases may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm just a baby in this business of love. I'm a mover, a shaker, like Mac tonight. I could take your last dollar with a throw of the dice. I got a gift for women from heaven above. But I'm just a baby in this business of love. I'm a smooth operator in all affairs. Sophisticated and debonair. I got all kinds of fancy stuff. I'm just a baby in this business of love. I'm just a baby. Nobody ever trained me. Somebody save me. I'm just a baby in this business of love.
Good evening and welcome to Sex City on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host Cordelia Huxtable and we're here every Tuesday night from 11pm till midnight talking all about sex and sexuality and books, music, art, people and my favourite community. You can keep up with us on Facebook, we're the group Sex City. You can follow us on Twitter at Sex City Radio and check out our archives and past shows at sexcityradio.blogspot.ca. I'm pretty excited about the lineup of guests I have for you tonight. I'm interviewing three women who do a plethora of sex-positive things. First up, I'll be talking with Karen BK Chan, someone whose witty, down-to-earth, anti-oppressive sex education I've admired from afar, even before I moved to Toronto. Next up, we'll be heading across the continent and calling Liz Andrade, who's in Seattle. Liz does a whole bunch of cool things. She's a sex-positive graphic designer, a comic maker, and a co-founder of a grassroots initiative called All Cycles, which we'll tell you all about soon. And then lastly, we'll be rounding out the night with Jo Allen Notti, known by the internet as the Redhead Bedhead. We'll be chatting to her in Portland, Oregon. So she started a blog reviewing sex toys, and now she's deep into a research project on sex and oppression and a lot of other cool stuff. I can't wait to get her on the line. So, Karen, welcome to the studio. It's really great to have you here in person.
Thanks for having me.
I discovered you while I was in New Zealand, and I came across the very famous video Jam, which was, if anyone doesn't know it, check out Jam, a performance model of sex. It's something that's excellent, and Karen put it together and narrated it. And then I moved to Toronto and I found out you lived in the city, and it's really, really exciting to have you sitting across from me in the studio right now. And so welcome to the studio. I'm really interested. Give us an overview of the things you do in your life at the moment.
Ooh.
It's a massive question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I start off the day often with insomnia because, as you know, in the city right now, it's very hot. And this is my first summer without AC, so I'm not sleeping as much as I would like to. So that's often how the early hours begin. I have a couple of jobs. One of them, I work for the municipal city government, mm-hmm. Doing sexual health work, and that's very focused on clinical stuff and reducing diseases.
Okay.
And the rest of my work, which is very close to my heart, is connected to sexuality in all the ways that, I guess, of late I've been saying are connected to feelings. But really, maybe it's the wider scope of sex beyond mechanics, beyond health, beyond wellness, but maybe into some of the woo areas of life, and maybe into imagination and possibilities.
You use the word on your website, emotional literacy. Do you want to describe what that is? It sounds like you kind of were going there.
Yeah. You know, I came to the term because it was closest to what I'm trying to say that I can't really say.
Okay.
and emotional literacy, I relate to it because I feel like I'm someone who came to emotions actually rather late. Mm. And so I really relate to emotions as a student, not as something I intuitively do well or have always done well or feel particularly good at. And so I feel like that gives me some insight into how it feels to feel troubled by feelings and feel overwhelmed by feelings or feel at a loss when it comes to feelings. Mm-hmm. So emotional literacy, mm-hmm. I love the term because it's a literacy, so therefore I can learn it. It's never too late, and even though I'm not a natural, I'm fine. And so I love the term for that. And what it means to me is just the language of emotions, and mm-hmm. and the vocabulary is part of it. A kind of the ability to observe it is a part of it, and the ability to play within it and to negotiate how I relate to my feelings. That's been the coolest part, and that is what a lot of my work is about, is helping people negotiate their relationship with their feelings.
And do you explicitly bring that into sex, or do your workshops tend to be about the two separately?
They're very much connected, and they connected themselves for me because most of my work in the earlier days was focused quite a lot on sex and sexuality. And what I started to see was that folks were having trouble or resistance or angst about their sexuality, and many of the struggles they were having were actually emotional. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, and there's a drive to solve these challenges through like mechanical changes or new tips or new tools
Top
or new
ten.
Toys.
Yeah,
absolutely. I slowly realized, yes, those things can help, but always the problems or the challenges come back. Mm. And often they show themselves to be like, oh, it's because of this emotional resistance I have to feeling vulnerable, or I get angry when I think about those kinds of people, and so I can never have a conversation with them in an intimate setting. Mm. You know, and those kinds of people could be anything from people that I'm close to, or people who are cis men, or people who have rejected me. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be anything. So I feel like those things, sex and feelings, come hand in hand, whatever kinds of sex we're talking about.
Yeah. And so how do you work with this then? You do a lot of workshops, you do speaking, you do writing, you're blogging, you seem to be doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. I guess I'm just feeling it out. I'm not sure.
Okay. It's wonderfully
what
honest.
To
I
do.
Love
that. Sometimes I do feel myself pulled into like this tide of how do you make a career, you know? And I actually find that those are the moments when things start to suffer. Mm. You know, I feel I question what I'm doing. If my intention comes from a place of like making something work or getting something popular or making people like me, let's say, mm-hmm. or getting more gigs, not only does it not work, but I don't feel like my work is very good. Mm. And I don't mean that in a cliche way, like, you know, when I'm totally in my flow, then work is so good. But I just mean that it truly feels a little bit like stagnant.
Right.
And so I don't really know what I'm doing.
Okay.
But I do know that when I do whatever feels good and right, mm-hmm. it feels good and right.
And it sounds responsive too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You see a need and you create something to try and fill
it. Or like sometimes they're just like inner stirrings, mm-hmm. you know, like things that hurt or feel very sad. I want to write about it. Or
I went to a workshop you did at Playground last year about calling in,
mm-hmm.
and did that come? I got the impression from the workshop that that kind of came from these inner stirrings. It was a beautiful mix of something that felt deeply personal and real, and also applicable to everyone. Like, I feel like everyone in that workshop really connected with this concept of being called out, and then also how we can call in with compassion. Mm-hmm. And I see you're doing a lot of these workshops. Mm-hmm. And do you want to talk a little bit about how they're being received and your work with that?
Yeah, that kind of work, that part of what I'm doing really comes from pain. I feel lately a lot of pain from witnessing the folks that and communities that I see as mine or my allies, or that I am allies or I'm an ally too, repeating and perpetuating a lot of pain. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of the image that comes to mind is like I'm falling on my knees a little bit, just out of like I'm in pain and I'd like to heal and I'd like for all of us to take care of each other. And I mean, this is my side of the story. What I'm seeing is that often while in pain, we are distancing from each other and causing more pain, and then there's more reason to protect ourselves. Mm. And mm-hmm. the people who are supposed to make me feel the safest or the most connected with are the people who I'm being left behind by. Mm. So it comes from a place of pain. What it feels like to do the workshops is that they're terrifying each time I do them because I know I ought to. Like my center or my gut or whatever you call it says, you know, I got to do this because it's scary and because it's a kind of a truth I'm afraid to tell.
Right.
And so that's what it feels like. And so far the reception has been all kinds, you know, folks who are really examining these questions, you know, what does accountability look like and the accountability that they're most familiar with. To let go of that model or to change that model can be very threatening. And so there's been lots of great conversations. There's a lot of folks who come and show me like their skinned knees, and they're like, I've been falling on my knees and I'm so heartbroken and I want to contribute and give, and I'm being exiled, or I'm exiling others and I don't know any other way. So yeah, really rich conversations. Mm-hmm. And I feel actually a community forming in those moments.
Yeah.
And they're not very like solid, tangible ones, but they're just moments where people are like, me too.
Yeah, I know. I hear people reference calling in. And I don't know if this is a term that's been growing or if it's coming from the work that you're doing, but it's really great when I hear people talk about it, because it kind of feels like this heart connection. It's like, yes, empathy is there.
Yeah. There's a number of really awesome things I've read and people that are doing similar work, and I do feel like it's time. This is the time, like in the various movements that come together like a giant tidal wave or whatever, and the wave is big enough and diverse enough, and we've been through enough that I feel like this is sort of the next surge.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
I like to, as we're talking, and I'm thinking about what you were saying at the start about being a learner and learning all this, and I really feel that you bring that to your workshops. It's definitely not a sense of, I've got all this figured out and I'm going to tell you how to do it. And I think part of what makes your facilitation work so well is that you are really honest and super real with people. And you have this humor and this great way of explaining things. And I was wondering, is this something you've consciously learnt to do while facilitating? Or does it feel very natural to you? I guess the question about your skill.
Thank
you
for that question. That's such a compliment of a question. it's like two of my favorite things rolled into one. it's I love that question so much. It's something I work really hard on doing.
Okay.
It's something that means a lot to me. And I think it partly comes from, I think I was quite a dishonest young person.
Whoa,
for most of my life. Yeah. And partly out of fear of like not being okay or not being appropriate or just not sure, like as an immigrant and as a queerdo and as a gender nonconforming person for a long time, like I just needed to round these edges that I didn't even know if I had or not, but I couldn't take the risk. So I think there were moments in my life where I thought, I think I'm a compulsive liar. Mm. You know, so it was very, it's a thing for me that at some point I said, I really need to and want to be honest. I feel like that might be freedom, you know? And it is, I think that's the service I want to offer, is like, I'll take a risk first and then see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. What do you think is next for you? Where do you think you'd like to go? Or when you imagine, you know, the stuff you might be doing in a year or 6 months, what does that look like?
Well, I am really hoping to write a book.
Yes. Amazing. I'm really
and it's like feels like a thing in my belly that I have to push out of my bum, actually.
Birth.
I don't know what I'm allowed to say on the radio, but have to shit a book out. And in fact, I feel like there's maybe 2.5.
Okay.
And it's stuck in there. So I don't know why or what. But some of the best advice I've gotten is like, don't write it for people. Write the book you need to read. And the thing that I've gotten really stuck on, and I still feel very, very stuck, is like this idea of like authoritative voice, you know. It's very easy for me to write that way because it's how I was trained by, you know, universities, and that's how books appear often. They're expertly. And so another piece of great advice I got recently is that everything is fiction. Even nonfiction books are truly fictional.
Yeah.
And that's helped ease something.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I hope that that's coming.
So you can tell a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The story of what I think I know today.
That's great.
Yeah.
We've got about a couple of minutes left. Do you want to just give us an overview of the workshops you've got coming up in the next month or so? I know there's a lot happening.
Well, there are a couple of calling in workshops. There's a bunch of ones that are connected to emotional intelligence. So one of my favorite pieces of work to do is connect professions that are often trained out of their emotional intelligence with emotional intelligence, like lawyers and a lot of medical model healthcare workers, folks who have to teach very technical things. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up. And I'm doing a few talks at conferences for mediators and people who work with families in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very looking forward to talking to them about including the feelings as opposed to putting them aside. And of course, start of school means a lot of orientations for universities.
Yes.
And you
do talks on?
On sexuality and consent and pleasure and what it means to not be a jerk. Basically, bottom
excellent.
Line.
Excellent. Takeaway message, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's been great.
It's my pleasure.
I'm super excited to talk to you in person. Like I said, I've been following you from afar for years, and it's like, you're actually here.
You're so kind to me. Thank you.
People can find you online in a bunch of places.
Yes.
Where are they?
Fluidexchange.org. Mm-hmm. And I recently bought KarenBKChan.com. I'm not sure why. I feel like it's the next step before I shit a book. I'm also on Twitter very occasionally at KarenBKChan.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you so much.
Thanks,
go
Cordelia.
Out and enjoy the sweaty evening and the following insomnia.
Thank you. Have a good
cheers.
Show.
So we're going to listen to some music now. Here's a New Zealand favourite of mine, a band called Rhombus, and their classic early 2000s song, Clav Dub. Thanks.
Yeah. This is Rhombus, sound nonconformist. We are asymmetrical, smashing through all stereotypes, bashing all archetypes. This is the new sound, the fresh sound of the Rhombus crew. The mercenary Mike Master, Merquan, wanna win.
Ready for the reserve flow, picking my channel. Come again with the gold chat, this is all I know. But you believe it is, me ready to explode. Freestyle, wicked by three MCs. Come and rock with we, Wellington represent. From the jungle I've been sent to get bent. Yeah, out the door styles, wicked and wild.
Chilling with the rumba sound. Chilling with the clap dump down. Chilling with the rumba sound. Chilling with the clap dump.
Yeah.
welcome back. Just at the end there, we had Clavdub by Rhombus, and then we were listening to Electric Powwow Drum by A Tribe Called Red, who are from Ottawa and made up of DJs from Nipissing First Nation, Six Nations of the Grand River, and Cayuga First Nation. And I'm really excited to have Liz on the phone. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
How's everything in Seattle tonight?
It's absolutely beautiful tonight in Seattle.
Yeah, that's good to hear. It's really stinking hot in Toronto.
I'm sorry.
So I'll do a quick intro. Liz has got a lot of stuff on the go. You're a sex-positive graphic designer, a comic maker, recently a graphic designer for Planned Parenthood, and also a co-founder of the project All Cycles.
Yes, yeah. Among other things, too.
Okay, it's a lot on your plate. So let's start talking about I'd like to kind of rewind back to the start and start talking about graphic design. And why did you start offering your services specifically to sex-positive organizations?
I started my own graphic design business back in 2008. And for the first, large portion of that career, I had all sorts of clients from all different industries. And I love doing design and I love helping people grow their businesses. But I was always just fascinated by the sex positive world. And it was always like this thing that I was a part of. But I eventually wanted to try and find a way to merge that with my professional life. And, I had friends who were sex educators or they worked in public health or, they sold sex toys or, they did something in that world. And I thought, well, maybe I can use my design skills and somehow, merge that with this world. So the last couple of years of my business, I predominantly marketed towards the sex positive world and really have met such amazing people and made some great connections. And really that's kind of what ended up leading me to the design position I have now with Planned Parenthood, which wasn't planned at all, but just sort of an opportunity that came along because of the work I was doing, and it was just too good to pass up.
How's the transition been from essentially working for yourself for 8 years to now working for an organization?
It's actually gone surprisingly smooth. I'm lucky enough that I'm working for an organization that is that really trusts its employees and values my time and my talent and allows me to kind of, make my schedule work for me and work in a way that is comfortable for me. So I've been able to, I go to an office 3 days a week, but I still get to work from home a couple days a week, which is nice. I'm doing work that's really rewarding, so it's been a really smooth transition.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I'm
really intrigued by the potential graphic design has in terms of supporting sex positivity and within organizations and businesses. How do you think graphic design helps get messages out and things like that?
I mean, I think that quality design adds a level of respectability and sophistication that in some instances, can be lacking in the sex positive world. Because there is such a stigma around sexuality, it can be really difficult to find talented professionals that are willing to take on the work like design. So I think that having, people who do have those skills who are also comfortable within the sex positive world, being able to lend that professional work is really important. I think it breaks down stigmas. I think it opens up doors for people who maybe find, may find that things within the sex positive world intimidating. It may break those barriers down.
Interesting. I like that. I was looking at your Tumblr earlier on today, and you're designing some really amazing comics. Do you want to chat a little bit about those?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I've always kind of, I've loved to draw, like, since I was a child, and I kind of got out of the habit of it for a long time in adulthood, you know, busy working and doing all that responsible adult stuff.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to make an effort to get back into it, and I love comics, and I just love the medium of comics. I think it's a great way to tell a story. And so I started this series earlier this year, and as a way to kind of motivate myself to stay creating things, I built it around like commemorative days that happened throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And chose specifically ones that I think relate to sex positivity. So like one of them was Abortion Care Provider Day, or Trans Day of Visibility. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to friends of mine to tell stories that related to those days, and then I adapted those stories into comics. So I was able to work with, I think there's four different pieces in the series right now, and they've been a lot of fun, and some of them have gotten like more attention than others. I did one on consent for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which completely blew up on the internet, which I wasn't expecting.
It's amazing. I was reading it today and getting teary. It's so evocative and beautiful.
It was so funny because I did not, I just put it out just sort of, you know, expecting my friends and family to see it. And I could not believe the overwhelming response that particular piece got. It was quite powerful. And the person that I collaborated with, the person whose story it is, she also just got such amazing responses from people. Wow. And it was pretty beautiful.
I think doing these stories through comics is a really exciting medium as well, because I love reading comics, and because they're stories and pictures, the people's stories seem a lot more alive than if you were reading it in a blog or an article or something like that.
Definitely.
I encourage people to check out the Tumblr. What was the address for it?
Most of my comics are on my Tumblr, which is just at lizandrade.com.
Yeah, it's really good reading.
Thank you.
And so tell me about, I've got a couple more questions for you. As a designer now for Planned Parenthood, what are some things you're excited about there, or upcoming projects that you're working on or can't wait to work on?
I'm really just like, I'm excited to go to work every day, and
that's so good.
Feel like I'm not only like getting to do, you know, fun design work and work with fun people that I love, but also being part of like something bigger, you know, being a part of providing quality healthcare to women who need it, and you know, being a part of the reproductive justice movement, I think is incredibly—it's just something that I mean, it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's like an extra reason to get up in the morning, beyond just, you know, getting to do fun design work and stuff. So I'm happy to be part of something like bigger than just the actual work I'm doing, but being like a small piece in like this bigger puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, you know, Planned Parenthood has a lot of really amazing educational programs that I wasn't even aware about until I started working for them. You know, I always knew that they did sex education, but some of the amazing programs that they offer are just incredible, and I'm so happy to be able to, you know, play a role in reaching people with quality sex education, which we desperately need.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been seeing photos of you on Instagram with lots of penis costumes and vulva costumes. So that looks like a blast.
Yes. We had a very strong presence at this year's Seattle Pride Parade, and me and a friend choreographed a little dance for our troupe of penis and vulva dancers.
I really wish my work involved me wearing penis and vulva costumes every day.
So great.
Yeah, yeah. So great. And then another amazing thing you're doing in your life right now is you co-founded All Cycles. And do you want to just explain to people what All Cycles is about?
Right.
And then let's chat about how it's going.
Yeah, so All Cycles is a grassroots outreach project that we started actually almost a year ago. It's going to be a year at the end of this month.
Awesome.
Here in Seattle, Washington. And we have a really simple mission, and that is to bring menstrual supplies to homeless folks in Seattle. It's something that is it's a big need for shelters and outreach programs around the city, and it's something that's just not donated very often. And I think part of that is the stigma around menstruation. And I think part of it is just that people don't think about stuff like that. They think about food, they think about coats, they think about socks, but they don't think about tampons and pads. And, that can be really important, especially if you don't have access to, laundry facilities, making sure that you aren't menstruating on your clothes. If they're the only change of clothes you have, that's really important. So I had read an article locally, just about it was written in a local paper that features a lot of stories about the homeless population in Seattle, and it's called Real Change. Mm-hmm. They'd done an article and had some quotes from different homeless women around the city talking about their struggles with getting access to menstrual products and just the problems that causes them. And I thought, well, there should be some sort of charity or something that collects these products. So I did, research on the internet, and sure enough, there's actually lots of groups around all over the United States and in Canada as well, in different cities that do similar projects. And one of the things that I really noticed about most of them, or pretty much all of them at that time, was that they were all very gendered, in that they collected products for women and girls. Mm-hmm. And because I know that 40% of the homeless population in the United States identifies as LGBTQ, I know that not all people who are homeless and who are menstruating are women or girls. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to isolate those people. So I thought it was important for Seattle to address this problem and do it in a very respectful and non-gendered way. So we ended up starting our own thing, and that's kind of where the idea of the name All Cycles came from.
Oh, that's awesome. And yay. How is it? Yeah, it is. I love that it started from you identifying the problem and then seeing the solutions and being like, okay, and we're going to do something else. That's great.
Yeah.
And
I think it's something unique to our city. We saw a specific need and a specific specific way that we wanted it done for our city, and just sort of made it happen. But yeah, so the end of this month is going to be 1 year. And in the last 12 months, we've collected over 52,000 pads and tampons for Seattle's homeless.
Wow, seriously?
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Totally didn't expect that. But it's been amazing, the supporters that we have around the community. It's been absolutely incredible.
Good outreach, too, to get that many people involved with this.
Yeah, we have a number of volunteers, and I have two other co-founders that run the project with me.
Mm-hmm.
We've done three donation drives, and we're going to be starting another one up next month. So we have different businesses that are drop-off locations. And it's the whole thing. It's cool. Kind of taken on a life of its own.
Yeah.
But it's actually really fun and incredibly rewarding.
Great. So where can people find out more information about All Cycles, particularly if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I wonder if my city has something similar?
If you live in the Pacific Northwest, or you have friends or family who live in Seattle and you want to tell them about the project, you can direct them to our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/allcycles. Or if you want to learn more about the project or reach out to us, and if you can't find an organization in your area that does something similar, maybe we can help you.
Cool.
You can go to allcycles.org and get in touch with us.
That's awesome. And so, Liz, we have to bring the interview to a close, but there is, where can people find out more about you? So they can read your comics at lizandrade.com. And mm-hmm. you've also got a design website as well?
Yeah, so my business site is kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit in hibernation mode at the moment.
Okay. You've got a lot going on. I totally get that.
Yeah, right. But yeah, if you want to check out some of my design work, you can go to cmdshiftdesign.com, or you can also follow me on Twitter. I'm just Liz Andrade on Twitter.
Wonderful. And I've shared all of those links on the Sex City Facebook group as well. It was really lovely to chat with you again. Liz and I first met in Vegas about this time last year, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And yes, thank you so much for being interviewed, and I hope you have a lovely rest of your evening.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah.
Have a great night.
Cheers, Liz.
Bye.
So the next song I have is You Know What I Mean, a song I loved getting moody to a couple of years ago, and that I've recently rediscovered. It's by New York band Cults. Okay, and welcome back. This is Sex City Radio. You're here with myself, Cordelia Huxtable. And the final guest on the show tonight is Jo Allen Notte. Jo Allen blogs at the Redhead Bedhead and wonderfully writes on her website that she's happiest and most effective when writing and speaking on behalf of quiet people who have sex. Welcome, Jo Allen.
Hi, Cordelia.
I really love that.
Yeah, it's kind of my favorite too.
And so Jo Allen's based out of Portland, Oregon, so another Northwest person.
Yes.
Yeah, how's your evening going?
My evening's going well. Actually, you know what, I'm going to be honest, because that's kind of my jam, telling everybody that like whatever's going on with you is okay.
Yeah.
My phone stopped working 20 minutes ago.
Of course.
So I spent the last 20 minutes like running around my house like a Muppet with like arms flailing, trying to figure out how to make myself reachable.
Good.
But we're here. So
we
it's
are
great.
Here. You know what? It's been that evening in the studio too, so we're pulling it together. It's really great to have you on the air. And I've got a bunch of questions for you. Do you want to just start off by giving us a brief overview of all the cool different things you do? Which I know is a massive question.
Yes. So, well, I started off with my site, Redhead Bedhead, that was there basically just because I wanted to learn a lot about sex, and I wanted to share what I learned with other people as I learned it.
Excellent.
And I kind of realized as I went that there were a lot more people like me in the world than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And by like me, I mean a couple of things. Kind of people who feel like they're not cool enough to be in the world of people who talk about sex.
Okay. Yeah.
And people who are quiet, and people who are dealing with stuff like depression.
Hmm.
In the beginning, I didn't talk about that. In the beginning, like, my online self was like cooler and sexier than me.
I think you're pretty cool and sexy.
Yeah. And eventually I realized that the world, appreciated and maybe a bit needed to know that even the people who write about sex, like, you know, hang out on our couches watching a lot of Netflix with our dogs and go through depressive episodes too.
So it sounds like it's actually similar to the first woman we were talking about tonight too. There's lots of honesty in the work that you do.
Yeah, and it took me a while to realize that that was okay. People didn't need me to be different than I was, which I think is a good lesson for everyone.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful thing to recognize.
Yeah, like wherever we are, it's okay.
Do you, in the work that you do, do you have a sense of what you can share, what you do want to share and what you don't want to share? Or is that fluid? Does that boundary exist for you?
It does. I've always had a pretty clear boundary around, interestingly, like of all things, my sex life. So I always say I write about sex, but not sex I am having. And it's weird. It's like my distinctions are like very fluid and and maybe kind of arbitrary. But like, I'll write about how I'm experiencing sexual side effects, but I won't ever write about my partners, and I won't ever write about, I always say it's not a then I put my legs here kind of sex blog.
Right.
So I feel like I share a lot of myself, so there are certain pockets that are very important for me to keep just mine.
Yeah. I find that really interesting as well. I think a lot of sex bloggers have that. There seems to be the public, and then there's the really private stuff. And in your blog, it's definitely not, and then I put my legs here. It's your blog is informative and honest and hilarious at times. Like, you write really well.
Thank you.
So you started in 2014 this research project on sex and depression, and it's been unraveling. You started with one survey, and then there was a second survey, and now it's kind of moving on its own, and I'm really interested to hear how it's going.
It's going really well. I feel like I'm a little bit becoming like addicted to research.
Yeah.
Because I keep saying like, okay, just one more. But I did the first kind of like just survey. So it was just numbers, and that was 1,100 people answering questions about how sex was impacting or depression was impacting their sex lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And after that, I did 20 interviews. And that I actually like sat down and talked to people actually over Skype. And that showed me kind of the holes in the survey. And that was really cool because it let me see what I wanted to go back and ask more about.
Yeah.
And I always say I kind of like combined the mediums for the next round of stuff because I learned through the interviews that I wanted to know more about relationships. I wanted to let people talk more. And I also learned that, well, I should have known this because I am one, but that people dealing with depression are really not super into like planning scheduled things that they have to show up for. So I did the next round of interviews as like a long form survey that people could do online in their own time. And that was
way more successful.
Yeah.
So that was like 170 respondents.
Wow. That's massive.
Yeah. And I still want to do one more round because right now I polled for information like sexual orientation and gender and race in this last round because I wanted to see how those elements were affecting people's experience. And what I found was 70% of our respondents last time were white women.
Hmm. Okay.
And I want to not have it be like the book of white women sex.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for the third survey is open now or opening soon?
They are not open now. I would, I actually want to approach this very carefully. I'm thinking of working with maybe more collaborators, maybe more groups. I want to find the I don't know how to put this best. I don't want to tokenize people. I don't want to say, come do this because I need information about your demographic.
Mm-hmm.
I really legitimately want to... I got a suggestion over the weekend at the Woodhull Summit to bring on perhaps another author or another research partner and have that person be a person of color.
Right, yeah.
So that perspective is there. And I thought, oh my God, why have I not thought of this? because it's an important thing that we think of when we look at our work.
Yeah. I love how this project is getting broader and more in depth every time I talk to you.
Yeah, and it's... you know, it's such. I'm so excited about what I can bring to the world with it. But you know, on the selfish level, I'm excited about what it's teaching me about how to do this kind of work and how to serve people better with it. Because you know, it would have been easy to just say, "Well, these are the numbers I have, and these are the people we talk to," but it wouldn't have been a good project that way.
Can you share with us just a couple of things that are coming out of the survey that you're discovering?
One of my favorite things that I always share is that I went into this and had a bunch of people tell me, well, you know, people dealing with depression, they don't want to have sex anyway. So how are you going to know if they have sexual side effects or, you know, whatever? Because they just don't want to have sex anyway. And in this last round, I kept the questions open-ended and just asked things like, you know, did you notice an impact on your sex life when your depression was untreated? And if so, what? And found out that out of 168 respondents, 56 reported increased sexual activity when they were dealing with depression.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
What a myth busted.
Yeah. It was kind of huge because that myth is a huge, like, kind of hurdle between people and getting their concerns about depression and antidepressants impacting their sex taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So many people just get told, well, it's depression. You don't have sex when you have depression.
Mm. Yeah. That's amazing. I really love those stats. I would never have thought that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It surprised even me.
And so you've recently been at the Woodhull Sexual Freedom Summit.
Yeah.
Which has been held over the last 4 days in Washington. And you've been facilitating things and you've been on panels and lots of exciting stuff. Do you want to give us just a quick breakdown of your experience there and the things that you were doing?
Oh, my goodness. It was so wonderful. I did three things while I was there. I hosted an event on the opening night called the Sex Geek Salon because I felt like it would be fun to have an opening night event that for people who didn't like yelling woo and stuff a lot, right?
So some quiet quieter. People who have sex,
right?
Yeah.
So we had like coloring books and puzzles and people just came and hung out and it was mellower and it was a ton of fun. I did a panel on navigating social media as an adult business.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that was fun. I got to speak with two of my favorite colleagues, Metis Black from Tantus and Sandra Bruce from SheVibe, and we got to talk about things we've seen done right and things we've seen done very, very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a blast to do. And then, of course, I got to present on sex and depression with Stephen Biggs, who is
my sex and depression hero, has been working on this project with me for 2 years. And that was just, the response from that was overwhelming and wonderful.
Yeah, I bet. It's something that people have been talking about for a while. Yeah. And Steve actually forwarded me an article in Vice that was published just a couple of days ago, interviewing you, which is amazing.
Netwood Hall.
You're famous.
Yeah, it was that that phrase. I keep thinking that phrase, embarrassment of riches, and I felt like that was what this last week or so was. Just so much good kept happening.
Wonderful. Yeah. I really love that. This is, unfortunately, we've got time to chat about today. I have thousands more questions for you, but we can ask them at another time.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me online at redheadbedhead.com, on Facebook and Instagram at The Redhead Bedhead, and on Twitter at, wait for it, Joella Naughty, my actual name.
Yeah. Not The Redhead Bedhead.
Not The Redhead Bedhead, because it's too long for Twitter.
All right. And I really recommend people to check out your blog. It's and your website. It's really informative and well written and interesting.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been wonderful chatting with you. I'm glad we managed to figure out the phone thing. I hope your phone doesn't stay broken for too long.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Enjoy the rest of your evening, Jo Allen. Thank you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, so this is Sex City for tonight. I'm so glad to have had all these awesome guests on the show. We've been talking a lot about being real and honest. And I love that. I'm Cordelia Huxtable. Thanks to our technician, Brett. It's been a blast. Remember to check us out, Sex City, at Facebook. We're on Twitter at Sex City Radio and blogspot sexcityradio.ca. We're going to go out with the song A Second Life by Florida.